You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Mike Johnson, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Late addition to the lineup. Logan Couture is going to call in about 5 minutes. The new captain in San Jose.
Captain talk. He can talk about what it's like to be a new captain and replacing a pretty long-serving existing one.
And how that went down, that transaction.
Yeah. What's how do they communicate that to a guy?
Yeah. With Joe Thornton still in the room, though.
No, it's better, though, because Joe is almost better. As great of a leader as he is, he's almost better served as an assistant.
Yeah.
Because he is very demanding. He's so passionate about it that he can run hot. And so it's almost better that he can be the bad cop, angry guy occasionally. And then maybe a calmer Pavelski or Couture could be buffer to that.
Plus, there's more run. Like, I know
Joe's not playing forever.
Exactly. As much as we think he's going to play forever, like Logan Couture is a guy that I could see there until he was 35 years old.
That's 7 more years on his deal or something.
Yeah,
so he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
You know, I think he's a guy that kind of has been lost in the shuffle a little bit.
His whole problem is whenever the Olympics roll around, he's gotten hurt.
Yeah.
The wrist thing when he's going to play in the 14 ones. He just hasn't played on the biggest stage. I think he got hurt right before the World Cup last time. He would be on these teams.
Yeah, he's a fantastic
player. Awesome player. Yeah.
But you're right. Like, you don't pay attention. All of a sudden last year, like, he had a great year because he was healthy.
Well, in the playoffs, he was spectacular.
He was a beast. Yeah. And, like, that whole comeback. Remember the comeback against
the guy.
He was the guy yelling at
the
bench. Yeah, he was yelling at the bench after the first
one.
That's one. And we got, like, that whole scenario, as crazy as that was from their standpoint, it was almost like you could feel it. I remember watching. Were you calling that game or no?
No, I called the previous 6.
Yeah.
Then,
like, I just remember watching that live going, like, this is insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
I know Vegas, like, that whole...
They got job.
They got job.
No dancing around.
There's no dancing
around. Horrible, awful 5-minute major.
It was a bad missed call.
So bad that it required them to change the rules.
They've changed the rules because of it.
Reactionary.
He's not going to have any answer on this. We won't ask him about it. But
no.
Patrick Marleau is still out there, right? Like, we're into camp, and Patrick Marleau is not signing in San Jose. The GM out there made that clear. He's gone public. He's like, that ship has sailed. He's not coming here.
That did not play out the way I thought it would.
Him being bought out and then
I thought by
for
him
employment?
Agreeing to the trade to Carolina, buyout, I thought all those other dominoes would have already been set up. There'd be no question. I'm not going to accept the trade or the buyout from Carolina unless I know I have the next job in my preferred location, I guess ideally San Jose, for $1 million or whatever it was going to be.
Right.
I'm surprised that it wasn't predestined.
I think he's surprised as well. Now,
I agree. I think it was all laid out, but then there was one wrinkle where Doug Wilson was like, I changed my mind.
They forgot to confirm with the team?
Because when that deal was probably signed and that, there was probably maybe a little wink, wink, nod, nod, we'll see in a couple of years type of thing. But that's how quickly things change. And I've said this to Brian, and I don't know where you stand on Patty Marleau, but, like, I think if he wanted to go to Edmonton for $750 or $1 million, like, they need goals. They need, like, he can still skate, and if he, at that type of money, he can give you 15 goals.
Mm-hmm.
How much does 15 goals cost you in today's world?
$3 million.
Patty Marleau could give you that.
Well, and he's, I would assume he's taking $700,000.
If he plays, if he decides.
It's Jason Spezza 2.0, right?
Yeah.
Been
yeah.
around a long time, made a fortune, I want to play somewhere.
Exactly.
This is what you're getting, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're waiting for the official captaincy announcement here in Toronto. It's going to happen at some point between now and opening night. But San Jose, they weren't going to make people wait.
Nope.
They've got a new captain, and he joins us now from the San Jose Sharks. Here is their newest captain, Logan Couture. How you doing, Logan?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. Congrats on the announcement.
How long did
you see this coming? I mean, did they tip you off over the summer that this was going to be the case?
I would say I wasn't tipped off. I every summer I have a pretty open dialogue with Doug, you know, on what he's thinking and what I'm thinking about the team. And I think he does that with multiple players. And then when I got back, I met with Pete and the coaching staff, and they told me. And then a couple days later, it was announced. So I'm proud and very honored to take the responsibility on.
Do you trust yourself that if they told you in July, you're the new captain, but don't tell anyone, would you be able to keep that secret?
I don't think. I mean, I would have had to tell my family and my friends. And I think I would have been good to keep the rest of it quiet. I don't know if I could trust every one of them to keep it quiet. So.
No, that's getting out for sure.
That's right. That's going to leak somewhere. But listen, Logan, they give you the captaincy for a reason. The way you've handled yourself, the player you are, the person you are. Do you feel like you got to change anything now that you actually have the C as opposed to when you didn't?
No, I don't. I don't plan to. I played with a lot of guys in this room for a long time, and they know who I am, how I am, how I conduct myself around the rink. So if I changed, I would be breaking it, and that's something that I don't want to do. I'm going to try and lead by example. I'm going to play the way that I played, during my whole career, and that's trying to do anything I can to help our team win on a nightly basis. I'm not the loudest guy in the room, and I'm not going to be, but other leaders in our team have that capability, and they're more vocal than I am, and they have free rein to do that. So that's what a leadership group does, and I think we have a very strong one here in San Jose.
With Logan Couture, it's a rare situation where you have a former captain of the current team still in the room, and Joe Thornton. Do you lean on a guy like that, or do you just kind of do your own thing? And if he comes to you with any advice, so be it.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I have two former captains here. I got Eric and Jumbo, and both guys are great teammates and great people, and they've both seen everything in the NHL. They've been on with different organizations. I haven't. The Sharks are the only thing I've ever known. So they've both given me ideas of things they've seen from other teams. I got texts from other guys that have played in the league. Dan Boyle texted me and gave me some advice. He told me what Dave Anishuk used to do in Tampa Bay, his favorite captain. So I've gotten some advice from different guys that I'll definitely keep in mind.
With Logan Couture of the San Jose Sharks, you were playing a primary role in one of the most famous playoff games in the last 20 years. Game 7 against Vegas. I don't care if you admit it or not. We all know it was a bogus call. It should not have been a 5-minute major. But that's not your decision. That was the refs. And you guys took full advantage of it. At what point during that run, when you guys put all those goals on the board and end up winning that game, did you feel like, okay, we can actually pull this comeback off?
I think during that I was so much in the moment that you just hoping you can score another one. We got the first one right away. I think that was huge. I think it was five seconds into the power play, and then the second one was a minute in. So at that time, I think you're thinking, well, let's get one more and tie it up. And I'm just so happy we got a couple more. That was just a crazy situation. Like you said, obviously it wasn't a 5-minute major. And you feel for the refs that made that mistake. And I like what the league did with changing the rules going forward now. So just a great, great game to be a part of, though.
We were talking before you came on. I was watching it live, obviously, and you scored right away, and you turned and yelled to the bench like, that's one. And what was the atmosphere like? How tough was it to keep your focus? Because that building, like, I could feel it shaking through my TV. And we all know, I mean, I played in that building. We know how loud that was. Or can be, like, what was the atmosphere like when you guys did claw back?
Yeah, so when Pavs went down, Jumbo and a few of the guys went out, and I think they brought him back to the bench in our tunnel where we go to our dressing rooms right there. So he walked by us, and Jumbo took the first power play unit and said, you guys go out there and get four goals right now, and you do it for Pavs. And that really fired us up, and it got to me. And you get emotional when you see a teammate go down, and especially when he's bleeding from the head, and a lot of emotions are running through you. So we wanted to go out there and try and score one. So when that first one went in, I just happened to turn and look at Jumbo, and I said, "That's one. Let's go." And the rest, I guess, is history.
Well, it was an incredible comeback and a great run for you guys last year. I think the expectations are going to be high with you guys again, but you're used to it. Good luck this season, and congratulations on being named captain out there. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Here's Logan Couture of London, Ontario.
Yeah.
Big Blue Jay fan as well.
Can't be having enjoying the baseball season this year.
I wasn't going to ask him that because
he's happy the hockey season has started.
Yeah.
But if you did ask him, like, what about the Jays? And what if he was like, what the hell is Shapiro doing?
Maybe
like,
we should have. Derek Fisher and left last night.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I don't watch a ton of baseball.
Yeah.
But you saw this guy yesterday. Did you see his performance?
Yes.
So first one, he's going back. And I know it's a tough play, and the wall's coming. I imagine that's it, intimidating. But he pulls up way short.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Worried about running the wall.
It was a bail jump.
Well aware.
And then the second one, the short hop, I thought was worse because he like turned his head as though he might get hit in the face and goes by him.
Stop, like,
it's like the double flamingo in hockey, like diving out of the way so you don't get hit with a puck.
Here's a question. Has that guy ever been pulled during an inning? Like not
get
a pitcher.
Get that guy out of here.
Not a pitcher.
That defense is so bad.
Where it's like the manager standing at the edge of the dugout and yelling at a fielder like, let's go. And somebody else is running out. Have you ever seen that? Like, that could have happened.
I mean, the thing is, the Blue Jays, their outfield is so pathetic.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, have you ever mind as a fan where a guy's, like, been so bad out there in mid-inning where they're like, we can't finish the inning with this guy?
No.
Where the manager's actually handing the hook.
I can't think of any that are not injury-related.
Yeah, it's always injury-related. I don't even know if you can.
Chuck Knobloch is the guy who comes to mind because he couldn't throw from second to first.
Yeah,
right?
But they knew that before the
game. Right, but like, I wonder did he ever get pulled after throwing a couple in the stands?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, guys,
maybe mid-game, maybe not mid-inning.
Legends have been pulled out during the inning to give them, like, hey, you know, they did that with Bautista.
The walk-off.
Right. He went out there for, like, the first out, and then they said, bring him in, and he did the big clap or
I'm
whatever
talking
it was.
From poor play.
No.
Performance-driven.
Like, I can't watch this guy for another at-bat out there.
Here's why you would never do that, because it's going to put a spotlight on your own stupidity, because he was a brutal defender before you ever penciled him into the lineup.
But I'm just... like thinking out loud,
we can't have another ball in left field.
The manager sitting there and like
noodles. I wonder.
Like, if, get in there right now,
Kenny. You could have relayed as a goaltender, where like the team in front of you was just so god awful. You want to snap on the bench, like, hey guys,
yeah, pull it together.
I have to think if you're a pitcher,
yeah,
and you're watching, you know, errors be made behind you on relatively routine balls, you might be like, hey, like, how do you not
just give me something?
Harry eyeball the guy out there, or at least get after him in the draft, like.
But that goes both ways.
Exactly.
You got to be careful.
And the goaltender.
No, but it's different. I'm not asking a guy to hit a home run. I'm not asking pitchers are doing their best. They're throwing their hardest.
Are they? But that's what I'm saying. How many guys would be like, you threw that pitch, you idiot? You threw a pizza right down the middle of the plate, a hanging curveball. This is the major leagues we're talking about.
And the goalie's like the same thing. Like, you got scored on from the blue line.
Exactly.
Like, wake up. Pull your head out of your ass.
Well,
I think you got to be careful.
You do. But internally, listen, when the goalie got scored from the blue line, internally I'm like, oh my.
Yeah, the guys on the bench.
I went all
the way. I sat on the bench when our starter would give up one from the corner.
Yeah.
And guys would turn and yell at me.
Yeah.
Like, what's this guy doing out here? I don't know. I'm watching him just like you.
Yeah.
I was telling a guy a story this morning. Chris Pronger had $1 million bonus for plus minus. We were beating Florida with 5 minutes left in the game, 5-1. And Stefan Matteau, from the corner, throws it at the net, and Fierzy's not paying attention. Grant Fierz, like, and it hits his skate and goes in, and Prongs happen to be on the ice. So it makes it 5-2. The game is over. We've won it.
Doesn't matter to anyone but.
But Chris Prongs, because him and I believe it was Lidstrom or Murphy. Somebody from Detroit had like a ridiculous plus minus.
And he was fighting it out with them.
And they were like neck and neck. And it was near the end of the season. And Prongs just turned and broke his stick over the glass. And then he comes to the bench and he's like, would you tell him to wake the F up back there? And Fierzy's laughing in the net. And at the TV timeout, he comes to the bench and he shoots a little water at Chris. And Chris is still like fuming. And Grant goes, you better be nice to me. We still got a little time left. I might allow another one.
Right.
And we kind of chuckled at that point once Chris
did he end up winning it?
He did.
Yeah, so
and he took everyone for dinner. And, you know, it was a great bonus in that. But, like, that's the type of stuff.
Prongs can run hot, too.
He does run hot. But that's the type of banter that goes on the bench. So if a guy's messing up in the field or on the mound, you know everyone on the bench is going, like, tell this guy to, you know.
Wake up.
Wake up. Let's get it going.
Yeah. Speaking of you and Prongs, we got to get that picture up on TSN4. Pronger posted this on Instagram yesterday. This would have been late 90s, early 2000s.
Like the shirts.
The two shirts. These are the two worst shirts I've ever seen in my life.
They You're in the NHL at this point? When is this from?
Oh, yeah. This is late
90s. I've not
90s.
Seen this picture.
This is 98, 99, something like that. Like, it's you know.
I mean, you have the doozy from your draft day with the...
Yeah,
the side the sports striping on the side of the
right.
The,
yeah, well that's
there it is.
That's a beautiful
Look
shirt.
Look at that shirt on the left. Yeah. I know on radio this is a tough sell job, but
that
you'll find
a
it on
floral
Frommer's.
Print on Chris and a.
Yeah,
we posted it on our Instagram account at TSN1050.
That looks about 11:58 p.m.
Oh yeah,
on a Tuesday night
that
in
was
Miami,
before,
that and was the game's on Wednesday.
Yeah,
but
we're getting reaction here. There's a bunch of people that are writing this in. Bruce tweeting and saying Billy Martin yanked Reggie Jackson.
Oh,
and they
yes.
started to brawl Fight. In the dugout. The game was in Boston. It was at Fenway.
Like Billy Martin had seen enough of Reggie.
Yeah,
he's
like you're at. Well, Billy Martin was a snapshot
no,
too.
He ran hot.
And Reggie Jackson was a lunatic, apparently one of the worst human beings in sports history. There's a lot of people writing in about that. And I guess there's a video. This was in 1977, June 18th, 1977. See if you guys can find it. We'll put up on TSN4. Get Off My Lawn sent this in, yeah.
That is funny.
Reggie gets right in his face, and they start brawling in the dugout at Fenway.
That
should
great.
Have been that should have been Montoya and Derek Fisher last night.
Yeah.
He should have pulled him out of left and said, we're brawling right now, Ted Lilly, John Gibbons style, because you suck.
I saw Derek Fisher trending, and I thought the basketball player, you, Derek Fisher. I'm like,
yeah.
You know you're awful. That outfield is terrible. Like it's a bad outfield. They've had some awful defensive players in left in recent years, Fisher being one of the guys that have given it a shot. McKinney's had some rough days. Teoscar Hernandez, remember him
mm-hmm. yeah.
last year? Now, Hernandez has been playing for them a lot this year, but last year, 2 years ago, when he was in left, it was a mess. But, like, the Boston media was tweeting about him, and they're focused on their own disaster because
right.
the Red Sox are firing their GM. Yeah. They're going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
And all of the Boston media on Twitter
Chiming
last night
in.
Was like, I can't believe this guy. Like, I can't believe how bad this defense is. Out
yeah,
in the
that's why
out in left
I,
field for the Blue
I just
Jays
I was
tonight.
Joking about it, obviously, but it's really funny that Reggie Jackson would be the guy that you, gets the gate.
If you're a manager at some point, you'd probably consider it.
I mean, guys make errors all the time, but if you are just a disaster out there and you can't even like you can't they can't hit the ball to you, then you shouldn't be in the
you
game.
You know what sucks though.
Yeah. If you're putting out a vibe like I don't want to defend,
please
like,
don't. Don't come to me.
The ball comes to left, I'm terrified.
Yeah. Right.
You shouldn't be in Major League Baseball. Like that's just a fact.
Tough day.
Because you're not good enough to DH.
Tough day for him to come back today though, because you know what's going to happen. They're going to start throwing him like fly balls.
Yeah.
And the second he doesn't play one right in
it's
practice.
It's going to be like one of those old movies where the kid is like, don't hit it to me. Hit it to me.
Well, the Yankees are in town now, so it'll be batting practice down at the Rogers Center.
Yeah.
Tyler texting and saying that photo of Pronger and Noodles looks like Lloyd Christmas and Harry Dunn.
Pretty much. That was before Pronger. He's on the cusp of entering the salad rebuild nowadays.
There's a number of potential candidates for a salad rebuild.
Is I don't know if it's urban legend or true fact. Noodles.
Yes.
Hayes, you both play. Are hockey helmets bad for your hair? Your
it
follicles?
Must be. Well,
there's
apparently,
a disproportionate amount of youngish athletes that are, you know... Thinning.
Fading.
Well,
Fading.
You know what it's like. MJ, you would take your helmet off and there would be half a head of hair in there. Like, I don't know if your hair gets caught in the padding or whatever, but I feel like I was lucky with the mask because the mask was from the back. But it
Yeah, you would lose hair in your helmet.
I don't want to go all scientific, but I got two I read somewhere. One, I thought, like, well, maybe it's like suppressing the follicles. They need to breathe or something. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I read somewhere that one of the hormones that is bad for hair growth is testosterone. And so a professional athlete probably has a slightly higher level of testosterone just given the way that they're wired and the stuff that they're doing. And I wonder if that kind of person with the testosterone level, if this is true, maybe that explains some of the...
That is pretty deep scientific fact.
I like to bring my research to the
show. There's three guys with hair in here. We're soft as butter in this room.
And then if you look the way I played, it would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's the same as me.
Right, exactly.
But you look at a guy who played like Wendell.
Yes.
You know, Wendell would go through the roof. Messier.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
like,
a good point.
No follicles left.
Good point. Like, Gordie Howe had a big forehead.
Yeah.
His hairline started
But
in
somebody
the
who, like Phil Kessel, well, Phil would be an outlier, though. Phil would be an outlier.
Phil's an incredible athlete. We know. His body runs at a different level, even if he doesn't look like it. Maybe he's already blessed with...
Yes, that's true.
Phil is jacked up to
be down in Arizona. Put our sports medicine department on it.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move back our Canadian hockey rankings, our seven NHL team rankings. We'll do that a little bit later in the afternoon. Mike Golic Jr. will join us. We'll let you hear some of the Tim Tebow rant today on ESPN.
He was fired up,
too. He was fired up about not being paid to be a collegiate athlete.
Yeah.
And Antonio Brown is not going to go on the exemption list, the commissioner's exemption list, so he's going to play. What kind of production do we expect on Sunday down in Miami? We'll get into that more. And Greg Williams responding to what Odell Beckham had to say about him. And a passive-aggressive shot. These are two teams that are jokes. Cleveland and New York are two jokes. And yet, I'm so intrigued by this game.
Can't wait.
Both of them 0-1, and it's the Monday Nighter. So we'll get to that and more coming up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Mail-in Friday brought to you by sportsmarketplace.ca, the place to buy and sell all things sports. It's where sports fans go to put their stuff on waivers. NFL Week 2 beginning last night, and Carolina, they're 0-2, both games at home. They had a chance to beat the Rams last week. They had a chance to beat Tampa last night. They couldn't get a yard. And Cam Newton is a broken-down individual, man. His shoulder's beat up. His foot is beat up.
1 week in, he's all beat up.
2 weeks now,
but he was...
They knew that. He had, like, reconstructive shoulder surgery. They're trying to change his mechanics. It's a lost season, it feels like, already at 0-2.
Well, I like him. He came out and owned it and said, I need to be better. It starts with the offense. I think, like, if everyone just left the outfits alone, they just know he's just going to dress outrageous. Like,
Who cares about his clothes? Like, somehow, like, you know that's like, less time on your wardrobe, more time on the playbook. Like, there's not enough time to do both. Not you, but I'm saying, like that sentiment.
Oh, I would never. Like, I don't care
about
that.
You can dress Natalie in your own personal taste. It got nothing to do with how you play.
I agree. But no, I feel like he pushes the envelope just to be like, is anybody going to.
I think that's exactly what's happening.
I feel like he's laughing behind closed doors and go, watch what I'm going to walk out with now.
Are they going to act like this is normal?
Everyone just doesn't want to touch it.
I think Matthews is going to get there too. Like, Austin Matthews is he'll wear some uniforms and some get-ups that will make you turn your head. Russell Westbrook is probably the most famous athlete in North America for his gear. Like, he showed up dressed as, like, a traffic pylon once.
Like, I don't remember that.
I'm describing it properly.
Traffic pylon.
He was, you got to see
I'll Google
the gear this guy's worn, like, to games. And he's doing it because he knows the camera's going to catch him and people are going to start talking about him. And Cam knows it, too. Cam's got the bandana going on last night.
Whatever. Well, who cares? And the thing is, if he doesn't start throwing the ball better, getting healthier, people won't care at all what he's wearing because he won't be the one doing the press conferences.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, like, there's he's still obviously an NFL quarterback, but he's going to want an extension soon. I think his contract's up in a year or so. He's going to be 30. You're going to give him a 6-year deal for $30 million per year?
Well,
he can't throw a 20-yard out. You can't trust him to run. He's 250 pounds. You're going to run a scat back on a fake reverse.
That was a real indicator last night.
Right.
Like, if he can't pick you up a yard.
And Christian McCaffrey's amazing, one of the best backs in the league. But if you can't get a yard with him, you don't trust him physically to, like, dive in there or fly over the top or, you know, take a sweep and, like, cut under a guy and take a hard yard.
Right.
That's telling you something.
No, that is, I saw this today. The one portion of football where the old school and the new school come together and they both accept, this is something that works and should continue to happen, is the quarterback sneak.
Because, Tom Brady.
Exactly. Brady does it better than anybody.
Anybody.
Roethlisberger's always done it well. Cam Newton, of course, can do it.
Yeah, he's a beast.
But something's up, because if you're using him as a decoy when you need 1 yard, and Christian McCaffrey's a great back, but he's not Jerome Bettis.
Right.
He's not a guy that is going right through the tackles. He can do it, but that they knew that. I mean, the way that they manufactured that play, it was all about decoys. It was all about fakes and trying to get him to the outside. And if Cam Newton can't pick up a yard on a quarterback sneak, something is going on with this guy.
Yeah.
He's broken down.
But he kind of laid it out there, like, my foot, my shoulder, but it's on me.
Right.
Almost like, hey, don't look at my foot, don't look at my shoulder, I'm banged up, but I got to accept responsibility.
Well, at the quarterback position, that's what comes with
yeah.
it. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, we're joined now by former NFLer, collegiate player at Notre Dame. You know him from ESPN and ESPN Radio. Here's Mike Golic Jr. What's up, Mike?
Not too much, guys. How we doing?
Well, we're trying to figure out what that play call was last night. Can you get a read on where Norv Turner, Riverboat Ron were going with that, why they wouldn't just QB sneak with Cam?
I cannot figure it out other than the fact that being a creative offensive coordinator right now in the NFL seems more fun and something that we reward than ever before. And so maybe they just wanted to get in on the party. Everyone's run their version of Philly Special. And that was the first run action I've seen off it. So that was cool, just probably not the time or the place.
What's your read on the future of Cam Newton? Everyone appears to be, you know, launching hot takes on whether or not he's done, whether or not he can change his style and keep his career rolling. Where do you stand with Cam in the future?
I just want to know if his foot's okay. Like, the more and more I think about it, like, this guy mentioned after the game, you know, there's no excuse for it, whether it's my shoulder or my foot. And it's like, all right, well, maybe when he talks, we should listen. And that foot's probably a little more banged up than it's being given credit for at this point. Like, we saw him even in the pocket. Forget the fact that the Panthers aren't even using design runs with Cam to really any extent right now. You saw him in the pocket, and he was a guy who, unfortunately, like the rest of his career, was under pressure a little bit too much for my liking and taking some hits in there, but wasn't really moving around a lot to evade it. And this is always a guy that's kind of had that Ben Roethlisberger comp of being a big body in the pocket that will not only shrug off pressure, but is definitely going to buy time to try and find his way out of it. And we didn't see a lot of that. We saw a lot of him getting rid of the ball a little bit earlier than he'd like to and absorbing some of that contact and just knowing he could because he's big, but not really feeling comfortable enough. So I'd like to see him get healthy. I'd like to see his foot get healthy before I all of a sudden decide that all of these rushing attempts that we feel have beaten him down so much have finally taken their toll, when in actuality he's probably got a hurt foot that, you know, he didn't hurt on some sort of designed rushing attempt during the off season or fall camp that I missed. Like, he just started taking real hits. So to act like that's been the problem seems misguided.
With Mike Golic Jr. from ESPN Radio, Antonio Brown, his public image has taken an absolute beating. I mean, the court of public opinion, the verdict is in on him, and it's unanimously negative. But he's healthy, and he's ready to play. And by all accounts, he will play on Sunday down in Miami. The Patriots, I think they're going to find a way to make this work. What kind of production do you expect out of Brown this Sunday in particular?
I don't expect all that much. I mean, he's coming into New England at a place where they're going to siphon it down to what he can do well right now. Like, we've become more well acquainted with Antonio Brown's flaws as a football player through the last few months than I think ever before. And one of them is he's not a guy that's overly concerned with precise route running, which is kind of a necessity of the Patriot offense. So you'd have to imagine they're going to tailor things down to a few things that he does well, you know, the most well, I should say. He does pretty much everything else well, and just use those. You know, this is how the Patriot thing works. It's not like they're going to need much to beat this Dolphins team that's a sinking ship that everyone is trying to jump off of right now. And he's only been there a week. He couldn't really do much in that time period. He wasn't on the practice field until this week. And so ultimately, I feel like he's a guy that's going to be playing catch up. And then, you know, whatever production you get this weekend hangs in the balance of next week when the woman accusing him, accusing him of sexual assault and rape gets heard by the NFL. And then we kind of go from there as far as his football future.
Odell Beckham Jr. came out and put Greg Williams on blast and claimed that Williams told his players a couple of years ago to take Beckham Jr. out during a preseason game. And Beckham claims that Williams' own players were the ones who actually relayed that information to him. Odell Beckham Jr. is a guy on an 0-1 team that got embarrassed last week. We all know the Browns' records over the past 7 or 8 years. They've been atrocious. And now they head into New York. And Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator on an 0-1 Jets team, who have also been atrocious for years, jumps on the mic and says this about Odell Beckham Jr. today.
He is one of the most dynamic players in the league for him to even.
That's your opinion?
He's one of the
What's New York's opinion? The Giants' opinion. What did the Giants do? So that's not a question for me.
So a little passive-aggressive shot at Odell Beckham Jr. again from the coordinator of an 0-1 team that's been awful.
Taking runs at him.
Like, this is, but I'm intrigued by this matchup on Monday night, Browns-Jets. What do you make of this relationship between Beckham Jr., Williams, and the fact that this game is going on Monday night?
I mean, there's the two guys that are overwhelmingly confident despite recent results, right? Like, they both got impressive NFL resumes in different regards, and so there's no debating that both of them have been great in certain points in what they do, but lately it hasn't gone very well for them, so you've kind of got this egg on both of their faces, but the confidence isn't going to wane, and so it does make for something interesting. I mean, the idea that Greg Williams would coach a defense to go to the edge and maybe a little bit over doesn't seem all that shocking to anyone, right? And the idea that Odell Beckham Jr. might take and spin, you know, maybe what guys were saying around the locker room and make it a little more than it was also doesn't seem overwhelmingly shocking. Now, the thing that's interesting for me is he's going up against a Greg Williams defense that doesn't really have great cornerbacks right now or great cornerback depth at this point. And that seems problematic when you're trying to cover a guy as good as Odell Beckham Jr., who's also got Jarvis Landry out there, and who's also got David Njoku out there, and who's got a quarterback in Baker Mayfield, who I think is going to come out with a little extra shot of that chip on his shoulder this weekend. And so, yeah, for Greg Williams, I'm more worried the fact that he's got very few corners that seem up to the task right now, and his best player on that defense outside of Jamal Adams and C.J. Mosley is coming into this one with probably somewhat of a limp after a groin injury in week one, sidelined him for most of the game, and we saw that defense change in a hurry in the second half because of it.
Mike, you've been around football your whole life, football, locker rooms, football culture. Maybe just would it be a crazy departure to suggest that a coach might say, take that guy out, like that kind of language without not meaning to, you know, debilitate him for life, but just that kind of language, that kind of instruction, would that be out of character for a football locker room?
No, it wouldn't be out of character. Like the way I always say it is everyone knows the line. Like, especially now, there's too much money that's on the line for everyone. Guys understand what an unbelievable opportunity this is for everyone to change the lives of their families, feed their kids, all the stuff that we hear all the time. But there's still that understood portion that, yeah, like, I'm going out there to try and hit guys so hard that maybe they give up slowly. Mm-hmm. You hear guys say all the time, we want to make them quit in the fourth quarter. Like, that all kind of goes hand in hand. Football's a violent game. So, no, that would be out of line, especially for a guy like Greg Williams, who comes from a bit of a different world, a time before all of the sort of health and safety revolutions that we have now to try and be football's dinosaur on the defensive side. None of that shocking.
With ESPN Radio's Mike Golic Jr., all right, I want to play this Tim Tebow clip or a portion of it. He was on First Take on ESPN this morning, and it's caused quite a stir because, you know, there's legislation going through. There's a push to get collegiate athletes some more rights in the state of California, and this could be potentially a domino effect. And Tebow was on First Take, and here's what he had to say about his own experience down in Florida.
I feel like I have a little credibility and knowledge about this because when I was at the University of Florida, I think my jersey was one of the top selling jerseys around the world. It was like Kobe, LeBron, and then I was right behind them, and I didn't make a dollar from it. But nor did I want to, because I knew going into college what it was all about. I knew going to Florida, my dream school, where I wanted to go, the passion for it, and if I could support my team, support my college, support my university, that's what it's all about.
So, as a former collegiate athlete yourself at a very prominent school, what do you make of those comments?
I mean, that stuff is all great for Tim, and obviously he's got such a unique college, you know, firsthand experience of college football that that's great for him. And I don't know what kind of means Tim came up from, but he went on to mention more about how, you know, it was his grandfather's dream to see Florida win a SEC championship, mm-hmm. and how he wanted to do all these things because he loved the university. Like, I know a lot about loving the university you go to. I love playing at Notre Dame. I had a lot of family ties there. I wanted to give back to that place and give it a small piece of what it gave me, which is a life that I always wanted and to be close to my family and all these great things. But I also recognize that's one vantage point, and those are small sample sizes, and those are luxuries. Like, I had the luxury to make a decision to go to Notre Dame because I loved it and it represented all these things of my family. And I had the luxury when I was there to not really want for much because I grew up pretty well off. And I had a lot of teammates who didn't have those same luxuries. I had a lot of teammates that were sending money home during the month to help their parents pay bills back where they were from. I had teammates whose parents couldn't fly out to see them at games. I had teammates who all could have benefited from a little bit more money. And so I sort of you know, that's great for Tim, but to say that, all right, in college football, this legislation shouldn't pass. I don't know if that was Tim's larger point, but it seems like it, that this legislation shouldn't pass and college athletes shouldn't be allowed to benefit from their image and likeness, because that's what we're talking about with this bill, by the way. Not the guy should be paid by the university and all right. these things that people are really, you know, diametrically opposite to. It's just that, hey, you know what, if a car dealership wants to pay you $1,000 to show up and be do an appearance at their thing, yeah, maybe you should be able to make a little extra money if they're willing to. And what does that really hurt? Because, again, there's a lot of guys that need it and don't have the luxury to play college football for all of those fun, altruistic reasons. Like, for some guys, it's a way out, and that's what it's always going to be.
Great stuff, Mike. Really appreciate the insight, man. We'll do it again down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
There's Mike Golic Jr. from ESPN Radio, former NFLer and, again, collegiate athlete at Notre Dame, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com.
Mike did a good job summarizing it. I mean, everyone has their own individual perspective. But the one part that I think even Tim Tebow can agree on, you want to talk about, you know, I want to support my school, my family, my family, the school. That's not a two-way street. Schools are not supportive of their players if they're not good enough anymore. I don't know how many times we've seen basketball, football players want to transfer for legitimate reasons, whether it's the coach left, they're allowed to leave, but the player can't,
right.
Or whether, you know, illness in the family or a change of curriculum or whatever it might be, and all the schools are like, no, you can't change and go play. You owe it to us. It's not a two-way yeah. street. The schools want all the love and the respect and the family towards them, but they don't want to reciprocate it when it's not in their best interest. It's very much like pro sports that way, and that's fine. But don't act like it is, like where everyone's out for each other's best interest. They're not. The school's out for theirs, not the athletes.
What are the attendance for a football game in Ohio State?
110,000, 100,000 people. Well, the Horseshoe's like 85.
Yeah, Big okay, House is over
Big House is like 109, 110. Okay.
And the players can't, like, they're, like, I've always been, you played college, I didn't. Yeah. So I don't know the dynamic. I know a lot of players that went to college. But, like, this may be the top for a lot of those guys.
Oh, it is right? the All top for yes. 95%. Yes. They're not moving
so why,
on beyond
like,
that.
Why, like,
and I think the conversation.
There should be an angle for these guys to at least make a living.
The angle is your likeness,
in
your
education,
jersey.
Right.
No, but, like, you can, they're not saying right now the discussion is not, should the schools pay you for playing?
No.
Should they get a stipend because you're on a revenue-producing
right.
school?
Side it's like, endorsements.
Can you go to a car deal? Can you? If someone buys your jersey, can you do a car, whatever it is, and just make a little something off your likeness?
Can you sell your autograph?
I understand that, but I'm saying
which
these
is an
guys
easy way
should,
to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These guys should be able to make some money because not every person grew up like Tim Tebow.
Well, I guess the argument has always been, you know, do you put yourself into a position where you feel like you're going to be taken advantage of? Is okay, a yeah. company going to say, hey, we'll do this, and now we got you in our pocket, and you've got to do that? I don't know.
But sports,
I
mean, but
you can have some standardized contracts for these kind of arrangements, though, that all student-athletes have to abide by to maybe mitigate some of that. The idea that the rich schools will take advantage and they'll have a powerhouse. Well, you don't think that Duke and Kentucky get the best basketball players already? You don't think that Alabama and Clemson get the boost recruiting classes? Doesn't matter that they have more money.
But they're already paying too.
But that's what I'm saying.
That's the hypocrity that's not in plain sight.
Larry Tunsil, all these guys. Like
they're getting paid.
Hey, by the way, my mom needs some rent money.
But even if they're not, if you're going to the utopic version that they're not being paid outside the confines of the school.
Right.
It's not going to upset the balance of power because the balance of power is already dictated by the most celebrated programs.
Right.
So
Alabama's still going to be Alabama.
Right.
Ohio State. Yeah.
I believe
whether they have
boosters
wanting to do.
Well, yeah. Isn't
stuff.
It the, you know, the old story, like unwritten rule where a booster just hands you like an envelope. Hey, you know, welcome to school type of thing. I don't know if I'm sure you've heard stories.
I don't know what you're talking about, Noodles. You know what? Bowling Green. I heard some from somebody that I played with who was played junior hockey out in BC
right.
for a prominent player who went down to play, and he got Christmas cards with cash in it prior to showing up at his NCAA university.
Oh, yeah.
But these are just ways to circumvent what's going on.
Well, I mean, it happens in the CHL,
University
too.
Of Arizona,
let's not pretend like it doesn't happen in Canadian junior.
Believe me, we
And it
we
happens with that, with players who are like, all right, I'll leave college to come back and play.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, well, what are you going to pay me to do that?
Seems like the University of Arizona basketball team was like financing like $40,000-$50,000 payments to families, like nothing.
Everybody all the time.
So yeah. through the sneaker companies or whatever.
We'll get to our Canadian NHL rankings into the 6 p.m. hour. Ryan Dempster is coming up, I believe, at 6:25. We're moving pieces around here this afternoon.
A lot of moving pieces. That Rappler's head's going to explode back there.
Yeah, something's going on here. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Ryan Dempster coming up in the final hour. We'll get to our Canadian power rankings with the first official day of NHL camps happening throughout the country. And the Maple Leafs are out in St. John's. They're going to announce a captain at some point between now and opening night. I wouldn't expect it would happen in St. John's, but I guess you never know. But I would think you want that in Toronto. You allow all of the media to be down there.
You do it upright.
And Mitch Marner is, I guess they're working on a contract, but who knows? I mean, maybe it's going to happen in the next day or two.
I think it's going to happen the next day or two. And one other thing to consider, and we hate talking about it, the opt-out of the CBA. Because if the players elected to opt out, it would change the structure of your contract. Bonuses and guarantees and how you want to get your pick, because it would matter a ton, because they might not be hockey in 2 years.
Yeah.
So if they know, or they have to wait till the 16th to be assured that there will be hockey the next 3 years, that the CBA will be, whatever is going to happen there,
right.
That's another element to it that you would take into consideration.
Well, that's a good point, too, with the Marner contract. If it's going to be, let's say, a three-year deal and he wants it backloaded, it won't be signing bonus. So if that backloaded deal, they go into a lockout or whatever.
He's not getting it.
He's not getting that money.
So you would be not doing your job if you didn't consider that when trying to sort this out.
It's got to be considered. So we'll see. I mean,
maybe for all of them. Well, the whole bunch of the guys that are hanging out there, they're
yeah.
Now they would probably know. I mean, they should be able to dial up to Donald Fehr because they've negotiated like 5 days in a row in New York.
Yeah, it sounds like they're pushing the needle along there. Like, again, it's pretty quiet.
We've all been there where it feels like you're making progress.
Do you think they might work on a whole new CBA? Like, it's not only about opting into the final 2 years, that they might rip this one up and say, hey, let's sign a new 10-year deal? Or is that what you're indicating? Or
I think the first step will be not opting out, but it's part of the conversations to not opt out. I bet they're working on frameworks of redefining HRR and pension contributions and all the different things that the players want to try to control. International play
will be
part of it.
Why is the NHL involved in the PA's decision to opt in or out? They shouldn't be.
Right, because you're like, if you're going to stay with status quo, it's got nothing to do with us.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in front of you. Whatever
we made our decision, we opted in. Now it's your decision.
I think the framework's there. They just start changing things
around. The players are using this as an opportunity to try to
nibble
around the edges.
Yeah.
Dustin Byfuglien, personal leave. Not their day one of camp in Winnipeg. Hey. Yeah, because, you know, obviously he deserves his privacy in the matter. And Paul Maurice came out and said nothing sinister or anything like that. But there wasn't a timeline given either.
Well, you hope that he's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's a family member, we don't know.
You don't know.
Real life, right?
You know, with in terms of the team, the game goes on, and they're waiting to sign Laine, they're waiting to sign Connor. Right. There's been a lot of turnover.
Well, especially on the back end.
And if Buff's
going to have to play 26 a night this year.
Right.
And be awesome for that team. No Myers, no Trouba. They have no more right shot defenseman other than him from last year.
Right.
Now, Neil Pionk's in there.
I think Pionk's going to be a really good player. I don't mind him.
Do you really?
I don't know if you watched...
I called a few of his games.
You didn't like him?
I like him when he has the puck.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. There was a night where I called a game where I don't know where he was going. Like, he was in the wrong... Like,
in the power
he wasn't
play?
Even the wrong... He was in the wrong area code. Put it that way. Because I remember being so shocked as to, like, that should have been just an easy play, like... body position, and he was gone. Yeah. But I still think there's some upside there. Well,
there's been a lot of turnovers.
Yeah, he's got to play.
Okay. We'll get to our Canadian rankings in the next hour. Ryan Dempster will join us. We'll tee up Yankees-Jays. It sounds like Derek Fisher not even playing tonight for the Jays. That's got to be a message after last night.
Well, there you go, Noodles. You want him benched.
I want him benched.
There you go. Noodles just made the call to pull him out of the roster off the lineup.
Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.